Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 21st of May 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market had its best day in 6 weeks. We'll have the details in a few moments with Heath Moss from HLM Investments. But first, there's been a steep rise in Australia's unemployment rate as it returns to levels not seen since the pandemic. The Bureau of Stats says the unemployment rate increased from 4.3% to 4.5% in April. That is the highest rate since November 2021. Nearly 19,000 jobs were lost, with females driving the decline. Youth unemployment also ticked higher from 10.2% to 11.1%. So just how concerning is this in the face of global uncertainty and higher interest rates? And what does it mean for the future of interest rates? I spoke with Deloitte Access Economics partner and macroeconomist Stephen Smith. Stephen, with the unemployment rate rising to 4.5%, how would you describe the state of the labour market?
Look, with the data today, the labour market is clearly cooling, but it remains resilient. It's no longer as tight as it was in the post-pandemic period, but a 4.5% unemployment rate is still very low by historical standards. The important point here is that the balance of risks has now shifted. So the labour market is still resilient, but it's no longer absorbing new workers as easily as it was.
So where are the job losses coming from, and what kind of anecdotal evidence are you seeing?
The weakness in the labour market data appeared to be concentrated in parts of the labour market where there are more marginal or flexible workers. So younger workers in particular, those aged between 15 and 19 years, saw the largest increase in the unemployment rate, also casual workers and part-time workers, and that flowed through to an increase in the unemployment rate for women. It's likely that employers are perhaps pulling back a little bit on labour demand, shifting towards increasing hours for existing workers as opposed to hiring new workers. And so when we see that happen, we tend to see pullback on hiring, particularly for entry-level roles. And sometimes we see female employment affected more because we tend to see a greater number of females working in either part-time or in sectors such as retail or the care economy, where there's a little bit more flexibility for hours and headcount.
So those increase in hours worked, can you explain in more detail what's that a sign of, and does it extend to productivity?
The increase in hours worked is probably the main reason why I'd be a little bit cautious about panicking over this data and the rise in the unemployment rate. So while we did see the number of workers drop in the month of April, the number of hours worked increased. So that suggests that firms are using their existing workers a little bit more intensively as opposed to hiring new workers. And so the story isn't so much about businesses cutting demand for labour overall, but maybe just being a little bit more cautious on new hiring. So basically using existing workers a little bit more rather than hiring new workers. And so, you know, that's consistent with a labour market that is cooling, but certainly not sort of weakening substantially.
Okay, so the RBA has been focused on inflation recently as it lifted interest rates. Will the board now turn its attention to the labour market, given the jobless rate is now above its year-end predictions of about 4.3%? And what does it mean for monetary policy?
Look, I think it certainly gives the RBA another piece of the puzzle to consider. Our view was always that the RBA was probably going to be on hold for the next few months, and I think this just strengthens that view. Inflation is still the main concern for the Reserve Bank. But this unemployment data was a little bit softer than expected, but it's by no means a reason for the RBA to kind of quickly pivot. So likely to be the next move is still up, but not for a few months while the RBA kind of stays on hold and really considers the impact of the three interest rate increases that they've already put through. And just remember, by increasing interest rates, the RBA is trying to slow the economy and lift the unemployment rate. So this is part of what the RBA is really hoping to see, because that means less upward pressure on inflation.
And just finally, and on an unrelated topic and moving on from the budget, there was an interesting interview with Amazon's Jeff Bezos on CNBC. This is all oversimplified, but he basically backed a tax policy idea to eliminate income taxes for the bottom half of US earners, as the top 1% of taxpayers pay about 40% of all tax revenues. I bring it up because of this ongoing debate we have here about tax reform and lowering income taxes and the like. Is that such a viable idea? Could it be viable here, or is it just pie in the sky stuff?
Look, it's really easy to see the sort of political attractiveness of an idea like that. The US labour market and income tax is very different to Australia. In Australia, doing something like that would be extraordinarily expensive. The Commonwealth relies a lot more on personal income tax than the US federal government does. Probably a more realistic version in Australia would be to lift the tax-free threshold. I mean, certainly we do need to reduce reliance on income tax, but likely in Australia that would need to be accompanied by increases in taxes elsewhere, such as the GST or large spending cuts. So, look, it's a cute idea, but yeah, pretty difficult to implement in a country like Australia.
Stephen Smith there from Deloitte Access Economics. Let's go to the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 rallied up 1.5%. Eight of its 11 sectors rose. Materials the best, led by BHP, which gained 3.1%. And some of the gold miners. Real estate stocks rose, as too did the big four banks. So for more, I spoke with Heath Moss from HLM Investments. Heath, first of all, how did both the equity and currency market react to today's jobs data, and what does it mean for interest rate expectations here?
Yeah, look, the ASX 200 had a smaller pop upon the release of the data, but then it faded quickly into the day's lows. However, we have seen regained momentum again, and we have seen new highs on the equity market, so we're up around 1.7% there. So it was a mixed reaction. The initial reaction for the Australian dollar was the opposite, though. It had an immediate dip of around 0.5%. But again, that has also rallied into the day's highs. So rate expectations for June really haven't changed. There wasn't much chance of a hike to begin with. I think the market was only pricing in a 15 to 20% chance of a hike. That's now dropped to about a 6% chance since the unemployment data was released. So it looks like the RBA will remain on hold, but months ahead in August, et cetera, will remain live meetings as long as the CPI data remains hot.
What about international events? How are they flowing through to our share market? Because the ASX 200 was already up before the release of those job numbers.
Yeah, look, it's been a really positive day for the ASX 200, maintaining strong gains throughout the whole day, up around, like I said, about 1.7% as we speak. That's on the back of a really positive night in the US, fueled by the news that three super cargo ships carrying around 6 million barrels of oil were allowed to pass through the strait. Two headed for China and one headed to South Korea, and maybe this signalling an ease of tensions between the US and Iran. Then we had also had remarks late in the day from Trump that negotiations with Iran were going well and they were entering their final stages. So that's sort of language we haven't seen before or heard before, and this further boosts positive sentiment on the market. And then finally, we had the NVIDIA results out after market this morning, which was stellar as expected. And it sort of capped off a very strong Q1 reporting season in the US.
Yeah, so you mentioned NVIDIA. There's a lot of news out of the tech space overseas, that record revenue from the AI chip maker. We also saw an IPO for Elon Musk's SpaceX. Then there's talk of these rushed share market listings for both OpenAI and Anthropic. What's your take on the space and the fact that we're now seeing so many companies potentially coming to market?
Like I said, the NVIDIA results were really strong this morning, and the Q1 earnings results overall for the S&P 500 were strong, driven by tech, up 51% overall for tech. And 10 of 11 of the S&P 500 sectors also saw earnings growth. So that was really a really healthy outcome overall. Also, the fact that forecasts have risen at their fastest pace since the dot-com crash paints a very bullish picture for the US markets and for tech overall, and obviously tech being the main driver. So the tech space is showing some strong signs again, and maybe there's another leg up in these earnings from the AI case, the AI bullish space. It looks like they're finally starting to see that return on investments from their AI-based investments, with revenue growing strongly via the cloud. Cloud demand keeps on accelerating. And we've also seen this, the likes of Anthropic, where ARR is now $30 billion per annum. And there's even talk this morning that they're going to have a profitable quarter this quarter. So this is what the market has really wanted to see. And with really bullish conditions like this in the tech sector, this is why you're starting to see maybe these companies looking to IPO, your SpaceX's, your Anthropics, your like you said, your ChatGPTs or OpenAI. I am a little bit wary though, because sometimes these sort of conditions can signal a top. We have seen similar events in the past, like this signal a top. These companies now, which have been hidden away in the private markets, are now become exposed to the public markets. And so expectations, will be there for them to perform, and they'll want to see results soon. And if they don't see those results, then valuations could be trimmed and trimmed quite aggressively. However, you know, SpaceX could be a different beast. And as Star Trek fans will say, space is the final frontier. And SpaceX has quoted that a potential total addressable market of $30 trillion in this sector moving forward. So if this is the case, and we see data centers in space, colonization of Mars and the moon, and then a $2 trillion valuation of SpaceX could seem very cheap moving forward.
That sounds like a long way ahead, though, when you're talking about colonization. Finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Look, obviously, I'm telling my clients to remain heavily overweight to US tech. The momentum is still there. The earnings growth is still extremely strong. And like I said, I think we may see another leg higher with these earnings as the AI investments start to bear some fruit. I'm also overweight commodities, which are related to that AI narrative, because obviously the build out of all these by the hyperscalers of these data centers are pushing up demand for a lot of commodities, including copper, aluminium, and iron ore. So I'm telling clients to remain long and overweight commodities names like BHP, Rio, Sandfire, etc. And then I'm saying we'll start to look into some of the downtrodden sectors like your healthcares and your Australian discretionaries. They're out of favour at the moment, but on longer-term valuations, they're starting to look attractive. So these are names like CSL, Cochlear, Sonic Healthcare, JB Hi-Fi, West Farmers. They're all starting to look attractive again on longer-term valuations. So if you can handle a bit of volatility, these could be some really good areas as well.
Heath Moss there from HLM Investments, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Give it a like, review and subscribe if you do enjoy it. Don't forget to watch On The Money on SBS World News, the weekday edition at 6:30. That's on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice, and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Did you hear that? That's not a storm. That's your internet firing up with Leaptel's NBN plans. Lightning fast, rock solid, and when you need help, you won't be stuck on hold with someone overseas.
Nope, you'll get real people right here in Australia. And get 500 megabit speeds for just $79.95 for your first 12 months. T's and C's apply.
Visit leaptel.com.au and leap to better internet today.